Hello, welcome to Do Not Submit, Do Not Despair, a podcast on self-defense for women and the LGBTQ plus community in the United States. I'm your host, Sarah Moore. Each month I interview an expert on a self-defense related topic so we can learn, prepare, and stay safe. This is episode 2. We'll learn about some situational awareness techniques, de-escalation techniques, and how to stay safe as a performer. Let's get started. My guest today is Jessie Lynn, a former police officer and current fire and aerial circus performer in North Carolina. Welcome, Jessie.
Hi, Sarah. I'm glad to be here.
Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Like you said, I am a circus performer in North Carolina. I do aerial and fire. Specifically, I do lira and pole. Recently, I got into film production, so I'm also making movies as well, so you could say I'm a little bit busy.
Yeah, just a little bit. And how many years did you work in law enforcement?
Let's see, I got into that right after undergrad. I did that about 2 years before I ended up getting out of it.
And about how many years have you been performing?
That's a good question. I did my first performance in 2019, and then I started performing professionally in 2021. So it's roughly 7 years of performing.
Cool. Oh, that's wonderful. So getting back to the law enforcement, because this is a podcast that's mainly geared towards self-defense, what type of training did you receive for self-defense or for threat assessment or de-escalation techniques?
I mean, there's quite a bit, obviously. So when you first go in, the police academy itself was 3 months long, and a lot of that, of course, is self-defense, things like that. Partly the physical self-defense is basically what you would probably imagine, which is like hand-to-hand combat, like you would learn in a self-defense class, a lot of that. The threat assessment actually is interesting because they would throw us into different environments. Like at nighttime, I remember that being one of the scariest ones where you couldn't see anything and you'd have to go through this empty building and assess whether something was there or not. And sometimes there would be and sometimes there wouldn't be, but that was part of the drill because in real life, you don't know. And if you're wrong, you got shot by these little plastic pellets. And I mean, they weren't lethal, but they hurt. It was enough to train into you. Like, you could be shot here. And I will say that definitely, even now, with what I'm old, so almost 20 years later, I still remember that. So I can't go into a dark building without being very, very uptight.
So what sort of things would you be looking for if you were in, say, a really dark, seemingly empty building? What would be the signs to look for that maybe somebody else was there?
Noises. Why? Anything odd noises? And the only thing is, like, don't keep yourself in the open. It was like very much like don't turn your back to an open area. Even if you can't see, like, try to feel yourself along the wall. Try to keep your back to, like, a closed area and the open area in front of you as much as possible so that hopefully you can hear or see anything that would be coming at you.
Should you use light or should you use darkness? Like, should you use darkness to hide yourself or should you use the light to try to find anybody there?
You know, I think it depends on the situation. Obviously, in law enforcement, when you're going into a building, you're going with the assumption that somebody's in there because usually there would have been a call, that came in or something like that. Sometimes we did use light, sometimes we didn't, depending on the situation. For me personally, I think as a civilian, I would use light.
Okay.
Because I want to see, obviously, if there's anything around there. And obviously, I tend to think that if somebody's there wanting to attack you, if there's light, they don't generally want to be seen, right? So that may help as a deterrent to some of it. If they don't want their face being seen, you've got a light, they might not want to come with that.
Thank you. That's really helpful, I think, for the listeners that are out there. And what about de-escalation techniques?
So all the de-escalation techniques that we had learned was actually talking, just like how you use your voice. And it's actually interesting. You can de-escalate a lot of things just by talking and how you talk. So if somebody, like, say, for example, is really angry and their voice is really high, keep your tone of voice low and calm no matter how angry they get, and it brings sort of the energy level down, which is actually helpful because my hunger, like, if you're, it just helps the energy, because if you match it and you're getting angry, then it raises tensions, and as you know, I'm sure most people know, as tensions go up, it's more likely to escalate into some sort of physical altercation. Whereas if you keep the energy low and stay calm, they may not completely calm down, but they're less likely to escalate it.
Good to know. So if you're in a in a group of people or you see a group of people, what would be some of the signs to look for that would indicate that somebody could be violent or unsafe?
You know, that's a good question, because sometimes there just aren't and that's the hard part too, right? Is that some people can look totally fine and safe and normal and you just don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, if somebody's highly intoxicated, that's always sort of what I would call a yellow to red flag, because when people are intoxicated, you don't know which way they're going to go. That's one. You know, also anyone who's like really fidgety or nervous, that's usually a red flag, or at least a yellow flag that something's going on. And there's something to be said, I think, just for intuition, right? I mean, you can go through a situation and there's just something, and I think we've all been there before, where there's like just this person, and there's just, you can't put your finger on it, but there's just something that feels off. And I find in my experience, 9 out of 10 times, there's a reason for that. And if it feels off, just it's off.
Well, it sounds a little bit like the spidey sense. And
right.
Have you ever had to use that when you've been performing?
Several times, actually. I think I rely on that, where it's just like just something that you can't put your finger on, like somebody or something in a situation is just, it's just off. So I separate myself from it. No, whether anything was off or not, I mean, I don't know. I'm just, fortunately, and knock on wood, I've not had anything bad happen, but I do rely on those instincts. If something goes off, just trust that.
That makes sense. And so you mentioned putting distance. So physical distance,
uh-huh.
It would be the primary thing that you'd recommend?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. As much as possible, of course. I do know, obviously, in some situations, there may be small areas. Maybe you can't have a friend or a buddy with you. Just keep a person close to you. Because I find also, you know, if somebody is a threat, if you're not alone, they're less likely to approach you or come to you. Because they want an easy target, right? Generally.
In a performance situation, if you're coming out of a show, have you ever had instances where people have tried to talk to you after a show or have been kind of like hanging around looking for you?
Yes. I know, especially when I first started performing, I think if you're a new performer, it's easy to take that as a compliment. But, oh, they are so interested in my performance, or B, they want to talk to me after. And then it turns into a little awkward. And then it's like, how do you get out of it? It'd be professional. So what I have learned is I don't go alone to performances, especially if it's like a nightclub or somewhere I don't know. I always bring a buddy. And when I'm leaving the show, there's either bring my buddy with me so you have a way to get out, or any event you work, they should have bouncers or some type of security. They should always have that. And I always ask them, like, hey, can you check the parking lot? Can you walk with me while I put my things in the car? And that has saved me before, too. Because there have been a couple times where, like, they've seen me perform and the guys want to wait in the parking lot for you to come and talk to me. But if you come out with a security guard, they just don't.
So, other performers that you know, have you heard any experiences that they've had where they've had to use some of these techniques that you're talking about to get out of an unsafe situation?
I think everybody has, that I know, at some point, you know, whether it's just the buddy system is really popular. You know, I may have heard situations of, I know a friend, I won't mention any names, was performing in the air and a guy came up to him, pushed her off the apparatus, which anybody who's aerialist knows that is insanely dangerous. So from that, what you learn is there's always a perimeter set up with people guarding the perimeter, because especially nightclubs, anybody perform those, people start getting alcohol and they go nuts and do dangerous things. But yeah, everybody I know at some point or another has had, especially as a performer, has had like a guy that just won't let it go, and they just will follow them and go in the parking lot. We've all learned different ways to get out of that and try to remain professional, but at a certain point, you don't have to be a professional anymore.
Yes. Yes, I've sometimes heard it as a hand rule. If you put your hand out and that's the distance, that if somebody doesn't stop and they close that distance, then they've crossed the line.
Yes. There's personal distance for a reason.
Absolutely.
If it's polite first time, it's like, hey, keep your distance here. Like, I need this much space. And if they keep coming into it, then you don't be nice anymore. And I think that's one thing I think as women that we've been conditioned into, that I have to fight that myself, is that we have to be nice, we have to be polite. But at a certain point, no, you don't.
I think that's one of the most challenging aspects of keeping ourselves safe as women and also members of the LGBTQ community. We are always trying to be polite and be seen as better and as good. And defending yourself is not necessarily a pretty thing. So it's hard to get into that mode.
Yeah, definitely. And especially if you're at a paid gig, right? If you want, the idea is obviously you want to get more paid gigs. If you're a paid worker, so there's always that fear of, oh my gosh, if I start this altercation or I look like I'm, you know, causing drama or being unpleasant, I won't get hired again. But, you know, you have to at the same time, your safety is more important than the gig. And if they don't care about your safety, do you really want to work with them anyway? Probably not.
That's an excellent point. Have you had any gigs where you felt unsafe and you just said, nope, this is not happening again?
Well, she had one where before I even went, I dropped out. There was just started to be yellow flags coming into it. And then about a week out from my show, just I won't go into a whole lot of detail. I don't want to just like out some of the people in there because they were good. But there were different things going on. And I finally just pushed through from it. I was like, this doesn't feel right. And I just got out of it. And after said and done, it was probably the right call based on some of the things I learned about what happened at that show. It's the first time I've ever done that. I really don't. I pride myself on being a professional, which is both good and sometimes works against me. But I did. I finally made the call on that one. I told the producers, like, there's a lot of safety issues here. I don't feel comfortable with it.
Good for you. So going back to when you were working in law enforcement, what sorts of physical techniques did you learn there that you could tell people listening that might be helpful or useful to know?
She does, without demonstrating, it's difficult. I mean, obviously, you know, I think one thing is, it is one thing I learned is, like, you know, if you're in a ground fight, is don't ever give them your back. Like, for some reason, like, when you're in a ground tussle, it's always, at least for me, like, I always want to roll over just because that feels natural. But as soon as you give them your back, you can no longer defend yourself. Whatever you can, try not to be on your back. And that way you have your hands and legs free to keep fighting back. And also, I think anybody who's done any basic self-defense, you know, probably knows this, but you know, there are spots, you know, with the eyes, like try to poke the eyes. You know, if it's a male, obviously, the genitals, kick that area. Anything you can do to fire yourself a few seconds helps to get away.
I've heard conflicting different self-defense teachers have had different things to say about if you get into an altercation. Some people in self-defense classes say, get yourself enough space to run and get out of it as quickly as possible. Mm. Other folks that have told me if it's gotten to the point of being physical, you have to basically keep hitting until they won't get up and come after you. And so those are two very different, different kind of philosophies. And I don't know that there's necessarily a right one. And I was just curious about your opinion.
Well, I think it probably depends, right? Because every situation is different. I mean, if you're in an enclosed area and there's not a lot of place to, say, even if you run, there's not a lot of place to go. If you're injured and there's not a lot of place to go, I mean, you might, maybe that would be an option. You have to just keep getting them until they're completely down. But you know, I would think, for example, if you're in an area where a few seconds of distance, you could get out to a crowd or run away, that would seem like the best option to me. So I would say it probably depends on the scenario.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. I was just curious on your thought about that. One of the other things that I've noticed is some of the people that I talk to are fully trained martial artists. They go to classes every week. They have training in specific things like judo or kung fu or karate. And other folks teach self-defense classes that take place over a weekend or over a couple of weeks. And I was wondering, do you think that going to a self-defense class would give people, if they went consistently enough knowledge that if something happened, they would be able to react? Or do you recommend going to a more consistent kind of a class over time?
Well, obviously, I mean, anything's better than nothing, right? I mean, even in, like, you know, I think if you just did one or two classes, they generally teach basic self-defense and anything else. So if the most you can do is, like, maybe a workshop or one or two classes here and there, I mean, obviously, do it. I mean, something's better than nothing. I mean, of course, if you go weekly or do regular training, I mean, like anything else, obviously, that's awful. But, I mean, just one or two classes, I mean, they teach enough there that, I mean, that could be enough to save your life one day. You don't know, you know?
What do you think about the safety apps that are out there?
Look at some of them. Some of them are great. The one my favorite one I looked at is the Be Safe app. What I liked about that one is there's this two things. One, there's this button you can tap. Like, you don't let go till you feel safe. So if somebody does something, you let go, it calls the police, which I thought was interesting. And the other one I've seen actually calls law enforcement. and let them know where you're at, because it has like the GPS tracking and you can put notes in and everything like that. I like that one. The other ones I looked at, there's what Saber has one, and it's attached to the pepper spray, which is interesting. So if you like spray the pepper spray, it indicates in the app and then tells your contact that, hey, this person, you know, their pepper spray's gone off, which is different. The other thing I find about the other ones is they, which is not bad, but it alerts your whoever your contact is, but not directly law enforcement. But the Be Safe one actually contacts law enforcement, which to me, I feel like if I'm in a situation where if I'm alerted on the app, you probably need to call the police if something's going wrong.
Does it have an option to either call law enforcement or call a specific friend?
I think it has both. To be safe, I think it has both. So you can put your contacts in there as well. So it's not just law enforcement. But I like that have the option to do that one as well. In the other words, I didn't see that option. Contact law enforcement. It contacts your contacts, which I assume at that point would call law enforcement, which isn't bad, right? Especially if you're on like a date and you have a friend who's following you on the app and all of a sudden it's like, oh, something's going wrong. They call the police.
And you mentioned the Sabra connects to pepper spray. Have you ever carried pepper spray?
I used to. I haven't in a while, to be honest with you. I used to, though, yeah.
So when you were trained in law enforcement, were you trained in the use of it?
I was. And I actually had to get pepper sprayed as well to carry it. So I'm very familiar.
Wow. What do you think about it as a self-defense weapon?
I think it's great. If you know how to use it. I mean, it definitely buys you some time, so I can tell you, but getting hit from that, it'll take somebody down for a couple minutes. Or the only exception to that, there are some people who don't react to it, which aren't very many, but also if somebody is extremely intoxicated, depending on what drugs they're on, they may not stop. There are some drugs, LSD maybe, PCP is the one where like you can hit them with whatever, they just don't stop. So that might be a limitation of it, but I don't know how often that would actually happen.
What do you mean by being trained on it? Like, how do you get trained in using pepper spray?
I think if you look up any like self-defense classes, they usually have, an option to learn how to use pepper spray. It's just learning how to aim it and set it. Like, it's not, you have to learn how to activate it. It has safety built into it so you don't accidentally set it off. But you can actually set it off. If it's not on you, like, it gets in the air and can irritate.
Gotcha. Okay. Were there any other self-defense weapons that you would like to comment on that you learned about in law enforcement or that you think might be useful for people?
Well, the ones I use, I wouldn't recommend for other people to use.
Well, I'm talking non-lethal, so I think you and I are on the same page.
Yeah, it's like, I don't recommend the lethal option, just to be honest, I don't recommend that. I keep in my car because you don't know if you use it as like a bat, for example. I guess like a small stick you can keep. You never know. That could be enough to build space. And those are non-lethal options. Even like the pepper spray, that's a good non-lethal option. I don't recommend lethal options for a variety of reasons.
Yes. Well, we don't advocate for lethal options here either, for sure. So if somebody wants to come see you perform in North Carolina, can we add your link to the show notes?
Sure. Yeah, I can get my website. And then usually, I'll be honest, my Instagram is probably the best way because I keep that most updated with any show dates and things coming up.
Great. And you want to call that out for the audience?
Sure. My Instagram account is jessielyn86. It's jessielyn86. In any upcoming shows, I always put that on there.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jesse, and be safe.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to Do Not Submit, Do Not Despair. We hope to educate and empower. If you feel the spark, please tell your friends and subscribe to the show. Do Not Submit, Do Not Despair is produced by DurgaCorps. www.durgacorps.com. DurgaCorps is committed to promoting safety for women and the LGBTQ+ community in the United States. Check out the website for a map of safe training spaces and links to affiliate companies that provide quality, non-lethal self-defense products. I hope you will join us next month.